Yes, I'm always a bit fearful when people say what my name means, actually, and when I say it, because then I think, you know, I have all these expectations about what I'm going to say, you know, that it's going to be very good. So I'd like you to put those aside, please. Because I found this talk actually quite hard to write. It's surprising. It's only 15 minutes, but I think it's partly just knowing what to include and what to leave out. But what I've decided to do is to tell you something about some of my experiences of connecting with the Sangha over the years, give a few reflections on friendships, and finish with a list of lessons I've learned over the years. So when I first came along, I was very concerned about whether I fitted in here. And I think what happened was that I overemphasized differences in circumstances compared to other people here. And I look back actually to a talk I did as a Mitra, and I described myself as a bit of an oddity, because I was older than most people. I was happily married, which no one else seemed to be except Dana Vera. Had a responsible job. And I had family. As I started to get to know people better, these differences seemed less significant. And I sort of realised more that what we shared was our values and love of the Dharma, and that became much more significant. However, it was helpful then, and I still find it helpful now, to get together with people in similar circumstances. So, for example, when I was a Mitra, I was in what we called a Right Livelihood group, which wasn't Windhorse Evolution. It was people outside there who wanted to make their work into a Buddhist practice. And, you know, it's an opportunity to share ideas and to talk about our experiences, so we didn't just feel alone in it. So I found that really helpful. And, you know, more recently even, I found there was one time in our Mitra group that all of us there were mothers who had teenage or older children. And we were we're just talking about the challenges of that. How, you know, you can really care for your children and their well-being, and yet we have to allow them to do things their own way, and what a challenge that can be for a mother. Right from early on, actually, other people in the Sangha have been a good example to me. So they've been role models. And from very early on, I was inspired by the order members I met and wanted to become more like them. However, I did fall into the trap sometimes of wanting them to live up to my ideals, and this could lead to disappointment. And it took me a while to recognise actually what was the real strength in them, which was that they were very open about themselves and how they practised. And I think that was actually the most important lesson for me. I have a tendency towards perfectionism, quite a strong tendency. And so for me, just seeing people being able to talk about ways in which they weren't perfect, and to see the necessity for openness, kindness, self-metta and compassion was really important. So I ended up actually learning from how people behaved rather than what they said. And I found that the ways others are different can be a great opportunity to learn. And the most striking example came when I first met Rishraketu in 1999, and we had a meal and talked actually for quite a long time together. And I was at that time working at Cambridge University Press. As Chittamoni says, I was a publishing director and responsible for, in particular, for the maths books for schools, which I commissioned. So I was actually very busy. And Rusha Ketu had just come back from a solitary retreat which lasted over a year. And I was just baffled by how he could have been happy doing nothing for over a year. It just was so foreign to me. And he told me about the greater mandala of uselessness, or greater mandala of aesthetic appreciation. And it's interesting that he not only just then told me about it, but within a few years later, when he became chair and I'd retired, I said I'd be very happy to help him with the work of being chair. So we agreed we'd meet up once a week, which actually we still do. And every single week, he'd say the first thing is, let's go for a walk by the river. And again, that was really counter to what I expected. I was just ready to knuckle down, do some work. And instead, we spent half our time enjoying the river. And we also had differences in personality. We had lots of differences. I'm going to tell you about one. He tends to like being spontaneous, and I like to plan. And you know, there are advantages and disadvantages to both. So, but over the years, I have become able to be a bit more spontaneous, particularly in teaching, where you really need to be to respond creatively to other people. But I still value planning. Hence, I have notes here. And of course, without planning, this day would never be what it is now. It really required quite a bit of planning. But the friendship with Rusha Ketu flourished because we share a love of the Dharma and we're very interested in how to communicate it. And that's really the basis of our friendship. He reads a lot and is willing to spend time doing that even when he's busy. And he uses what he learns to refine his practice. And I prioritise my to-do list. Fortunately, Rusha Ketu shares his enthusiasm, so he gives me little summaries of the most important points, so I do benefit from that. But I still need to learn a bit more, and actually I really see the value of just being. I make more of an effort now, you know, on days when I'm teaching, I really put aside the morning as much as possible just to be. I might read a little bit that's relevant for later in the day, but I really try just to be. And it's still, you know, something which I'm very aware I need to practice. So let me go on to give a few reflections around friendship. In doing this talk, I kept sort of, I kept reflecting on, you know, all different points around it. One thing which I think I really came to appreciate, interestingly, on solitary, was how I'm not entirely separate from those people I've become friends with. I share ideas, feelings, behaviours, likes and dislikes. It doesn't mean to say I just become completely like them, but there's an awful lot which, you know, you can't help sharing. So, you know, with friends who like music, I can gain a greater appreciation of music. From Vilokini, who has a great appreciation of beauty, you know, that encourages me in that area. The second thing was that we're different with different people. You know, we're not just a sort of fixed person there, but I was, you know, last year I went through the preceptor consultation process and I got reports from about 15 people. And every report was different. And that difference partly came because they're different people, but also because I'm often different with different people. You know, if I'm in a chapter with someone, it's going to be rather different from if I'm doing study with someone, or, you know, I see them mainly going to concerts or something. You know, the context we're in makes a difference. And, of course, they make a difference. You know, a relationship isn't, you know, you interact with each other. So I interact with different people differently. So it's like sort of different flavours. And so it just, well, I suppose it's part of, you know, that we're not a single entity, an unchanging entity, but we depend on the context we're in. And the other thing I notice is when I spend time with someone, I tend to grow to like them. And to appreciate more our common humanity. And I find it very difficult to dislike anyone I spend any time with. But connections are not all intimate friendships. You know, connections don't just flourish in the context of meeting one-to-one. And sometimes, you know, they don't even require speech. They can be appreciated in bigger groups as well. So I just sort of brought to mind wonderful moments in the company of members of the Sangha where I felt a great sense of community. And it can be just something like meditating together, doing a puja together, can just give a whole sense of being part of something bigger than me. I also really appreciate time in study groups or in chapter where we toss around ideas together and shed light on the Buddha's teaching in a way I couldn't do on my own. Something more can emerge. It's often on the occasions when I'm leading or co-leading that I feel the greatest inspiration, and actually it develops my faith through seeing other people. And so I feel very grateful to those who join me in classes, like some here, because they provide so much motivation and the conditions which help me to learn and to grow. And then to finish, I'd just like to talk about a few lessons. They're sort of things which I'd say I'm learning rather than I've managed to learn. They're sort of still practices for me. I mean, one is it's helpful to remember our common humanity and what we share with others, even those who seem very different at first sight. And I've got a little quote here from Jo Fox, which I'm sure you remember. She says, "While we celebrate our diversity, what surprises me time and time again as I travel around the constituency is that we are far more united and have far more in common with each other than things that divide us." And the second thing is that we can learn from others, particularly those who are different from us. And I've sort of already given examples of that. The next thing is that we can together achieve so much more than we can do apart. So Bhante Sangharakshita says that the bodhicitta, that's the will to enlightenment, is much more likely to arise in a spiritual community, a situation of intense mutual spiritual friendship and encouragement. And I think, you know, I've had sort of just little glimpses of that on a very much smaller scale, but I can understand how doing things together is really so powerful. And then the next lesson is that to deepen our connections, it's helpful to listen, and it's helpful to share our experiences. So listening helps us to understand others, and from feedback, aspects of ourselves that we're not entirely aware of. So when people tell us about ourselves. And on the other hand, articulating our experience can help us to understand it better. And it enables others to comment, you know, maybe critically even, and to encourage. Of course, we need to be a bit careful about who we're open to. But when you're with someone you can trust, I think, you know, I was too closed for a very long time, probably still am. And relationships with others are a strong spiritual practice with plenty of challenges. So sort of areas of my practice are learning from others, but without comparing. We've already had a little bit about that this afternoon. And I think what I find helpful is to focus on particular behaviours that it might be helpful for me to take on, rather than focus on a quality. So, for example, with a friend recently, she's very good about sending text messages if someone is in a bit of a difficult way or something. And that's a behaviour that actually it's useful for me to take on. If on the other hand I say, oh, she's kinder than I am and I'd like to be a bit kinder, that really isn't so helpful. I mean, not just because I'm doing myself down, but also because it's making kindness seem like just one thing. So it's much better to look at behaviours and it's something I can do. The next thing is to listen to others without trying to fix them and impose my ideas. Taking a kindly interest. And it can be painful to see someone upset and natural to want to help them to escape that pain. Yet it's not helpful to try to rush in and change things for them. It's much better to let them express what they're feeling and what's happening for them. And the third thing, probably the most challenging, is becoming less self-referential. It's so easy to feel hurt, isn't it, when I feel slighted or people don't seem to care as much as I think they ought to. And I think there are two ways in which I work on that. The first is imaginatively to put myself in their position and to try to do the best for them, to see, you know, what's best for them rather than just always thinking what's best for me. And secondly, it's having an aspiration to include more and more people in my circle of connections. It doesn't mean to say that I'm necessarily going to have more and more friends, like a sort of Facebook thing where you sort of try to get as many as possible. It's much more of just being willing to, you know, smile at someone, you know, be friendly. I think, be friendly to as many people as possible. So, you know, it's quite interesting just doing this Sangha Day with my chapter. You know, we've been doing some organising, but actually the circle there of people who have been contributing is enormous. You know, people producing the shrine, the Biomatis Mitra group producing the shrine. There are people organising children's activities, doing the stalls. Yes, I can go on. I think Chittamani is going to say it later. But, you know, there's so much. And it's just working together. We produce so much more than we could have done apart. And it's been a delight for me because I come in and I even have surprises, although we've been organising it. You know, the surprise of the lovely shrine. Even had surprises with Suryamani sort of getting us all to hold hands. It's just been lovely. Anyway, I'd just like to finish with a quote, not a Buddhist quote, but a quote from Einstein. So my mathematical background coming out a bit, but I really love this quote. And he says, "A human being is a part of the whole called by us a universe, a part limited in time and space. He experiences himself, his thoughts and feelings, as something separated from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of his consciousness. This delusion is a kind of prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires and to affection for a few people nearest to us. Our task must be to free ourselves from this prison by widening our circle of understanding and compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in its beauty." Thank you.